We've got Don on the line. G'day, Don. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Annie, and really pleased to be back, and very pleased also that you're back in Australia.
Yeah, that's true. We're specifically talking to you about Cuba because you've been a long-term member of the Australian-Cuban Friendship Association, haven't you?
Yes, well, it's called the Cuban Children's Hospital Fund.
Okay.
I was persuaded to join at the pain of all sorts of consequences by the late Taz Bull, who used to be the National Secretary of the Maritime Union of Australia. And he started the fund up in very unique circumstances in 1997 and persuaded a lot of us, including in the, if you remember, the Organising Works programs, in, around that period, a lot of people joined then, and a lot of his old friends in the union movement and migrant communities had joined as well. So I became one of them, and I'm currently the president of the Cuban Children's Hospital Fund, yes.
And recently, because given the pretty outrageous negative behaviour of the US, the Cubans are in a fairly polis condition at the moment, aren't they?
Yes, well, there's, it is pretty outrageous what's being done to Cuba right now, and specifically what's being done to its people. And so just from a humanist point of view, we need to sort of be thinking about, well, just what is the United States of America up to in the Caribbean, but specifically in Cuba right now? And then secondly is the implications for the professed Australian government support for the rules of the international order. And we might come back to that later on. But
no leg to stand on.
The direct intent of the US policy relative to Cuba for 60-odd years has been deliberately and in its own words to make life miserable for the population through an economic blockade so that life will be so miserable, and this is the theory, that the people will rise up against their socialist government. And one of the spin-off effects of that, of course, is to deliberately try to undermine the very high priority that the Cuban government gives to its public health system. And so our focus in providing solidarity support is to provide practical solidarity to the cardiopediatric center in the William Soler Public Hospital, which is in Havana, and to support where it suggests we should, its system of, I think it's 9 clinics that are spread around the island for its population of 11 million people.
And so you recently actually got through some of the cannulas that they needed to be able to do this absolutely vital work.
Yes, well, the most recent request we had, and the system we use, is that we provide practical solidarity, equipment and supplies on request and as defined by the staff at the Cardiopediatric Centre. And their most recent request was a problem with cannulae, you know, the connectors of various fluids and bloods and so on into the veins, and called cannula or cannulae. And they were getting desperately short of those for tiny babies who were being prepared for an operation or waiting for one, and for small children. So we're talking about pediatric cannulae that were needed. And we worked out an arrangement to be able to get a shipment into Cuba just at the beginning of last week.
Can I ask you how you actually managed it?
Well, it's really, it's both straightforward and tricky at the same time. But firstly, we get the priority confirmation from the centre itself, from Dr. Selman, who is the director and chief surgeon. and he works with his staff to work out what's needed, and then he advises us. We then go searching, sometimes with his help, for a supplier of what is needed. We open a discussion with that supplier, and the supplier, to the degree necessary, locates a manufacturer, and then just through normal transactions that avoid any connection to the USA or any material connection to the USA to get the required goods into Havana Airport in the first instance and then to the hospital.
Just speaking there about the kind of very direct relationship between what's going on internally in Cuba and the kind of protracted campaign of the US to suffocate the country economically. But we're also seeing that it seems like the US government is shifting towards being interested in intervening militarily. We had Trump saying this week that Cuba's at the top of his list for regime change after Iran, and that it's only a matter of time before they increase their military intervention in the region. So could we talk a bit about what you're seeing happening in the region militarily?
Yes, well, you're spot on. The suffocation of the Cuban people is founded in an economic blockade that's been going for 60 years that Trump intensified in his first administration and has raised to a new pitch in this current administration, particularly led by this character, Marco Rubio. And as you say, the suffocation is now reinforced by a military blockade that illegally interferes with and blocks trade by any country with Cuba. And so that included Venezuela with regard to oil for fuel to operate the economy. And it involves other countries as well. There's one or two exceptions from Mexico, in which goods have been able to get through on a humanitarian basis, and the consequences that might flow if the USA militarily blocked a Mexican aid ship. So, yes, you're dead right. It's an escalation, and the reason is because Cuba, particularly in regard to its priority on public health, is a direct threat to the ideological value system of the United States that says that the primary purpose of healthcare provision is profit making, not the care of people. And so if you have right on the doorstep, just 90 kilometers away, a small country of 11 million people that is able to operate a healthcare system despite the severity of the blockade in 60 years, that prioritizes and puts first the needs of the people, then that is a threat to how it breaks apart the American value system. And they hate that. And they're determined to wreck it. And the determination of the Cuban people matches that with the determination to defend it. And we say, well, we ought to take sides here and be on the side of the Cubans in being able to defend and develop their healthcare system and, of course, the spin-off effects to other parts of daily life.
There's an interesting announcement that medical brigades. The Cubans have supported health brigades to other countries that have required, who need health support, doctors, nurses, and they've really punched above their weights. But some of these countries are now expelling those medical staff because of pressure from the US. Do you know anything about that?
Not in great detail. I do know it's happening, but I'm not going to be able to comment in any great detail, except to say this, that what I've been saying about Cuba is that it is an example. This is why it's a threat to the United States. It is an example of a socialist approach to humanism. And there are many examples, but the medical brigades that go to populations in countries that are in dire straits because of a natural or climate change imposed disaster.
Yeah, we're talking about Dominican Republic, we're talking about Haiti, we're talking about all these amazing interventions that they've made.
Yeah, Haiti is a good example. And so they send a blockade. Now, the medical brigade teams consist of maybe 10 people, or it might be, you know, a couple of hundred people. But they go to any part of the world where the country will accept them, and they provide practical support to the most impoverished, the most harmed by a natural disaster. And so they are an exemplary example of how socialist humanism works as a solidarity on request type framework. And the United States cannot match that. If it provides aid to another country, it is deliberately intended to create dependency of that country on the United States system. The Cuban system of providing medical brigades is to enable the country and the people itself to rebuild their health provision and local community infrastructure.
You were telling me something really interesting about Australian connection with Cuba, about a literacy program some people, First Nations people, went across to Cuba to find out about, and they were supported by Cuban literacy people. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm no great expert on the literacy program, but Cuba practices solidarity aid for literacy programs the same as it does with the medical brigades. And there is a really good example amongst a group of Aboriginal communities in northwest New South Wales, and there are other people better able to explain its history and so on. But they found that they were not able to succeed in developing English literacy, in this case, amongst Aboriginal children, and so they turned to the Cubans for assistance. And that assistance was provided into those communities, and it actually reversed the problem and developed a significant growth in school attendance and associated literacy in those communities. Now, as I said, I'm not an expert on that, but there are people who can talk about that in the Australia-Cuba Friendship
Society. But it speaks directly to the way of thinking and a way of approaching human issues that Cuba has to offer the world, and diametrically opposed to this fascistic arrangement that's coming out of America at the moment.
Well, that's dead right. I emphasise that socialist humanism as practiced by Cuba means that when it provides those forms of solidarity support, solidarity aid to other people, it's free. They don't charge for it. There are no consultancy fees.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. You don't need one of those.
It's not a profit-making opportunity. It's a humanist practice. So to return to the hospital, the Cuban Children's Hospital Fund, perhaps. So, as I said, the late Taz Bull set up the whole thing, and there's we're all aging now, so I wouldn't say that we're quite thriving as it was at our peak. But we have, as well as getting the cannulae into the cardiopediatric centre last week, we've got two projects coming up in which we're hoping to get a second shipment in, because they are desperate for them because of the intensification of the Trump blockade. But also we're looking at being able to buy a state-of-the-art hematology monitoring device, and but it, over the period of Taz's leadership, and then since he died, we've managed to get a whole lot of things into the hospital for the children. And they include neonatal beds, they include a sternal saw, this is just part of a longer list, surgeon's headlamps, state-of-the-art, so that they can improve the actual procedure. And of course, during COVID, we got in a significant shipment of pediatric type syringes that the Cuban system was running short of because of the blockade.
So how do you get people to help you out? You know, here's a little bit of a stage. Can you give people, our listeners, some sort of idea about how they might be able to contribute?
Well, the fund is managed through, it's our activism that does it, but it's the fund is actually managed by Union Aid Abroad, or AFIDA, and we're very grateful for that, and they've done a great job supporting our small project. And so people, there are a group of people declining, unfortunately, but that's the honest truth, who make a regular donation, monthly donation, to a feeder designated for the Cuban Children's Hospital Fund. And so anyone listening who would like to do that, or just make a one-off donation, can do that by checking out the AFIDA website, and I'll put some details about that up at the Cuban Children's Hospital Fund Facebook page later this morning. So anyone can make a one-off donation if they wish to.
Thanks for talking to us today, Don.
Well, we haven't talked about how this fits with the new international, or the so-called rules-based international order.
And well, there isn't any.
On the whole, a positive story there, on the whole, in its general direction, which is unusual on foreign policy these days. And we should talk about that at some stage.
Okay. Well, next time we catch up, that's exactly what we'll talk about.
Yes, and there's so much more. All the very best to everybody, and Cuba's really important because it sets an example about what socialist humanism means in practice in defiance of the empire.